And away we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. My buddy John is engineering and producing our program today. It is Monday, August the 5th, 2024. We'll begin our 15th year on the radio in January. Actually, our 37th year, then, we'll begin with Tucson Media in January. So it's not like we just got off the bus yesterday. We come to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media growing presence here in town. We have five radio stations under one roof. Our most recent acquisition, 101.7 The Drive, actually is celebrating its fifth anniversary today. So congratulations to my colleagues over on The Drive. We have our worldwide live listening for The Buckmaster Show at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Also on my website, we have a ton of content. Pretty much every show we have done since January of 2011 is conveniently available for your podcast at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors. I have two of them at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Art for your walls. He's a great photographer. Beautiful items there at the gallery. Picture framing, of course. And then if you want Mo to come out to the house to put the work up on the wall the way you want it, he makes house calls. Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and right next to Copenhagen. Monsoon Chocolate is also in that Midtown shopping area as well, in the same center there as Mo. And of course, he's online at moesgallery.com. Our one-on-one on the Monday one-on-one, Pat Willerton is back with us. We always love to have Pat on the program, a professor of political science in the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona. He's an author of a book on Russian politics. He's written dozens of articles and chapters. His professional expertise is focused on Russia and the other former Soviet Union countries. He's traveled extensively to Russia and has been doing so since his first visit in 1982. He'll be teaching two courses at the University of Arizona this fall, one on Russian politics and another on Russian policy. He's currently working on a research project with a Polish colleague on the contrasting Russian and Polish perspectives on the war in Ukraine. Dr. Willerton, Pat, good to see you.
It's great to be here again, Bill. May I just make a quick comment before we get into Russia about your sponsors? You have some wonderful sponsors.
We do.
But I want to commend one of them. I don't know whether they're sponsoring us today, but the last time, and that's Equine Voices.
Yes.
I was so touched by
them. Yes, we run their commercial.
Well, I went to their website, and I've adopted a donkey.
Wonderful.
Isabel. So I have to say, your sponsors affected me as a guest.
Well,
and I haven't gone down there yet to meet my donkey that I sponsored. Sponsor, but I just was really affected by them, and I appreciate that you are sponsored by good folk. I wanted to say that to you.
I would very much appreciate when you're in contact with their marketing people to tell them that you heard that on the radio here.
I will. I absolutely will.
That would be very helpful. Yeah. Thank you, Pat. Okay, a couple of items that I want to begin with before we even get to the ongoing war, more than 2 years since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. How about the Russian United States prisoner swap? Your take on that?
Well, I'm simply encouraged that we could find one area where, through intensive negotiations, each side could get something it wanted.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a lot about the people we care about that we got out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear much about the people on the other side, and some of them are described in quite negative ways here.
Oh, yeah, like Russian assassin.
Right.
And,
but, for the Russians, as they know about their people, They view them heroically as we view our people heroically. So I thought this was a win-win. Mm-hmm. I can't judge the value of each of these elements. And so does it add up that it's a more of a win for one side or the other? I just, from my vantage point, I think it's a win generally because when you look at the world today, we and they are not talking to each other about anything. Mm-mm. So this for me was encouraging. Does it mean there's going to be other change? I doubt it. But can't we hope, you know? Mm-hmm. And can't we simply take solace that people that we cared about are now home and are free?
Are we talking to the Russians on any level?
Not in any formalized way.
We still have an embassy.
Yeah.
Yet there.
Yes. And they do here.
Yeah, but...
But, you know, we've had our Secretary of Defense, they've had their Minister of Defense place a call to the other in some focused moment where there may have been a real concern, a military concern.
Yeah.
But to my knowledge, we don't have our top people like Jake mm-hmm. Sullivan mm-hmm. or Antony Blinken talking to their counterparts, you know. Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov came to New York to the United Nations. The Russia chairs the Security Council for a month. He was in New York. I'm not aware of any meetings. If they were, they were completely confidential.
Mm-hmm. How are the Russians viewing our political scene? Of course, we've got now Kamala Harris, who is going to be at the top of the ticket. How are they looking at this election coming up in November in America?
Well, if we step back a couple of months ago, Vladimir Putin said something that startled a lot of Americans when he said, you know, basically in the election, we prefer Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, President Biden is pursuing the conflict in Ukraine as they see it. He's no friend of Russia. However, and there was this sense that they like Trump, they help Trump. I think the evidence is pretty thin. They did much for Trump, but be it as it may. Putin said that, but he explained, we like predictability. Mm-hmm. And with President Biden, we have a predictable leader. I remember I was in the Soviet Union when President Reagan uh-huh. was our president, and he was no friend of the Soviet Union. This is before Gorbachev, you know.
Of course.
The early time. And you know, the Soviets, they respected him as a strong leader, but they appreciated predictability.
Yeah.
What Reagan said, he did. I think the dilemma with Trump is he says one thing and he may or may not do it. He's completely a wild card. Mm-hmm. So I would say at this point, Harris has come in. I think the Russians are still getting their bearings. But in the overall sense of the election, I think the Russian view is there is an American national interest and it won't make that much difference mm-hmm. whether it's Trump or whether it's Harris. One last quick point.
Sure.
Recently, when former President Trump was being interviewed, he was asked, How do you react to the Putin peace offer? In other words, we'll settle with Ukraine if they acknowledge, you know, Crimea and these republics. And would you accept this? He said no. So in other words, he said, you know, when he comes in, he's going to solve this in 1 or 2 days. Russians are generally laughing
about
that.
Yeah, he says when I'm president, in 48 hours, I'll end the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, so. I think the Russians had 4 years of watching him in action. Let's remember that it was under President Trump that we really started to seriously arm Kyiv, Ukraine. So, mm-hmm. you know, they know this. So I think for them, I don't think it will make that big of a difference. But I would guess they'll probably incline toward Harris the way they did to Biden because she will be predictable.
Uh-huh. They're looking for stability.
That has been a long-term Russian view, Soviet and post-Soviet.
How are we doing with the Russian economy these days?
Well, it's growing better this year than last year. It's the first half of this year.
I thought all these...
It's in tatters.
Yeah, we're going to be devastated.
Right. Well, it's not. The first half of the year, they're at a 5% growth rate. It's not going to stay there. I predict it's going to end up about like last year. Their economy grew at about 3.5%. And I'm not using Russian central bank figures. In fact, the Russians are rather conservative. They usually give figures a little lower. I'm talking about World Bank. I'm looking at international organization figures. Their economy is doing very well. Mm-hmm. You know, the sanctions boomeranged. The sanctions affected them briefly in 2022 for maybe 6 months.
Yeah, I'm a lot of publicity about McDonald's closing.
Right, right. But most businesses stayed, and what happened? Russian entrepreneurs bought them. Do you know what was an unintended consequence that I think was amazing? We had a lot of Russian billionaires before putting their money abroad. Well, of course, Western countries are trying to seize the money. They can't get it out. It's staying at home. That money is staying at home. Listen, this is the most resource-rich country in the world. Those billionaires' money is staying in Russia. I don't think anybody thought about this consequence. No. So the economy is doing well.
Let's take a break right here. When we come back, we will get to Dr. Willerton's views, and I want to hear them, as do our listeners, about his take on where we are on the ongoing conflict in the Ukraine. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's Monday One-on-One, and Professor Pat Willerton is my guest. He knows so much about Russian politics. Always great to hear his insight. Our One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Monday one-on-one. We love the one-on-one. We get to take a deep dive into a different topic every week to start off our program. And today we're talking about Russia and Russian politics with Professor of Political Science in the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona, Dr. Pat Willerton, a gentleman that I first met back in the with the fall of the Berlin Wall.
1989,
when I came out to your house. I was had only been in town a couple of years with Arizona Illustrated on PBS, came out to the house a couple of times and interviewed you, but we've kept in touch, and I'm glad we have. All right, what is it going to take now with the war well over 2 years into this war? What's it going to take to turn things around and maybe end the fighting, which has been just horrendous in terms of dead and wounded?
Well, you're asking two combined questions about when it ends, but also what will it take? Mm-hmm. The implication was for Kiev, Ukraine to win. Uh-huh. They're not going to win. So it's going to end essentially when they run out of capability. And they're running out of capability. They're only alive, so to speak, because of the aid that we're sending in.
Tens of billions.
But you know, they're basically losing manpower.
Yeah.
And we are not willing to send our men and women in to fight.
What's the average age of the fighter on the front lines for Ukraine?
I don't know for Russia. For Ukraine, it's 43.
Wow.
You know, so this is the problem. They've lost hundreds of thousands.
Generations
are gone. So to be honest with you, from the Russian standpoint, this ends when they've achieved their goals, which are Ukraine is not in NATO. It's not, and they're not going to let it be. When they have demilitarized the country, they've destroyed the military. That's what they're doing now. They're just grinding them down.
Mm-hmm.
When they what they call denazify, that means remove these Western Ukrainian nationalists who mm-hmm. follow this fascist leader from World War II, Stepan Bandera. And when essentially Ukraine returns to being a neutral country but will be sympathetic, shall we say, to Russian interests. Unfortunately for the what was Ukraine, they've lost four regions plus Crimea, that's five, and they're going to lose at least four more. Mm-hmm. Based on everything that Vladimir Putin and Sergei Lavrov have said. I'm talking about Odessa, Kharkov, Dnipropetrovsk, and Nikolaev. These will all be absorbed into Russia. I don't know, it's 6 months, a year, because Russian leaders have said, given what has gone on in the last years, we will never again allow Russians to live under the rule of Western Ukrainians. Mm-hmm. And those are overwhelmingly Russian places.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they will be gone. So what will be left is a rump country. But how this ends, I really don't know. You know, I have friends that tease me. They're not political scientists. And they'll say, you know, Pat, you predicted 2 years ago the Russians were going to, you know, bring this to an end fast. And I did. I thought they would. I thought they would go in the way we went into Iraq, do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand their approach. And I'll be honest with you, I can tell you their approach is one of attrition, but I'm not a military expert. What does attrition mm-hmm. mean? It means you just grind somebody down.
Uh-huh.
You kill their soldiers. You destroy their equipment, mm-hmm. everything. You're not focused on terror. Territory. Russians are not focused on territory. This is our talking point now. Gee, you know, when I saw you last, Bill, in March, they controlled maybe 24% of the country. Now they control 28%, let's say.
So they've gained
a little bit.
4%, but look at the cost.
And look what they've taken. That whole area was fortified. Mm. It was for 10 years it was fortified. They have slowly ground that down. There's not much left of that fortification that Kiev, Ukraine put up. So at some point that will be done. What's next, I don't know. Also, beyond the fact that attrition war is hard to understand, we have technologies that are new that are we're learning about. For instance, the impact of drones.
Yes.
This expectation of large aero, big armies running over the border. We can't have this because drones just wipe you out. So they're doing this very quietly, slowly, deliberately, but they're moving. That's the point. President Zelensky made a comment about 2 years ago, and I showed the clip in my classes. He said, in the end, we will not be able to win this war without American boys and girls. Now, I show that to my classes, and I've asked my students, are you willing to go to war to stop Russia in Ukraine? Because even President Zelensky says that's going to have to happen. It's not enough to give them the weapons. I've probably asked this to 200 students, I've never had one raise their hand. I don't think Americans are willing to send our troops there.
I don't think so.
So barring troops, there's nothing that we're going to give Kiev that will change this. Now, as you know, as we meet, F-16s have just arrived.
Yeah.
Have just arrived. I don't know how many, 6, 10. Now, these were planes that were developed 40 years ago. We're not giving them our best. We've never given them our best. We didn't give them the best Abrams, for instance. So we're giving them some F-16s, and it's kind of a talking point, but Russia has about 700 planes dedicated.
Wow.
Plus, they have some of their cutting edge, not their 40-year-old planes. So this is something we're talking about, and Zelensky is very excited about it. But will 10 F-16s make a difference? Apparently, we have 6 trained Ukrainians, which means somebody else is going to be flying some of those planes. I don't think it's going to change anything. So if you ask me, I don't know how long this is going to go on. It could go on for years. The Russians are not in a rush. You see, let me tell you the Russian view. Russians are buoyant. They're confident. Their view is they're winning. Their view is they're going to win. There's nothing the West can do to stop them unless the West puts in its troops and chooses to risk an all-out war. I don't think they think we will. So that's their view. They're very buoyant. They're in no rush. That's the thing to understand. They're in no rush.
And a lot of that is from their military history. I mean, look at World War II.
It's a long slog.
Yeah.
It was a long slog.
Yeah.
Well, look, their economy's doing well. The sanctions just did not work. Their economy is doing well. They, as far as they're concerned, they are moving toward their goals.
Are they still using draftees and
who, the Russians?
Yeah.
No. This is all volunteer. Do you know they have about 1,000 men volunteer a day?
I had no idea.
No, these are people. They're not drafting men to go to the war. There is service there, but they don't go after young men and send them to the war. These are the people they called up slightly older men who had already served in the military. So like the guys I know, my personal friends, males, maybe a bit younger than I am, kind of an old geezer, but younger, they have had to think about it because maybe they're in their 30s and they served in the military. They could go back, but they're still – and, they're 35 is different than 43 or 53.
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, you're working on that contrast with your Polish friend,
right,
a colleague. Is he still hard line on this, or is his perspective changing a little bit on the war?
Well,
because you've been working with him a while now.
Well, and he and I have differences of view, but I think he is a student of NATO. He's a student of Polish foreign policy and Polish relations with other European countries in the United States. I think from his standpoint, NATO growing with now 32 members, NATO coordinating activities, NATO becoming more interested in, for instance, Asia and maybe bolstering its relations with friendly countries like Japan and South Korea. I would say that he has a more – I don't want to speak for him. I think he has a more upbeat attitude about some of these things. And what he studies, he sees developments that for him are encouraging in terms of the West. I think he would reserve judgment on Ukraine. He would say to me, Pat, I think you're too certain of what the Russians are going to accomplish. I wouldn't be so certain of that if I were you. And, you know, he knows things and studies things. His view makes sense to me. So I think I wouldn't call him hard-nosed. I would just say he's very committed to more of a Western and NATO viewpoint. I think he sees a lot of room for maneuver.
Okay.
For what the West can do. I would say he sees more than I do.
I had a listener with a question for you, Professor. The question, would Russia aid Iran if Israel and Iran issue escalates?
They already are. They are in a, they basically have a strategic partnership. Russia has strategic partnerships with a variety of countries that it may not be allied with, including China. They're clearly not allies formally.
Right.
Informally they are, but they have a strategic partnership. So they do with Iran. As you and I are meeting, the former defense minister who is Putin's top military advisor, Sergei Shoigu, is in Tehran. This is a good question.
Really? Yeah.
He's in Tehran, and he's not there to discuss economic issues. You know that.
No.
The Russians are sharing capabilities. It's a two-way street. You know, the Iranians had very sophisticated drone capabilities they shared with Russia. I think Russia's now up to speed. They maybe they were a bit behind the curve 2 years ago. They're not anymore. So he's there now, and they absolutely support Iran, as does China. So as this thing ratchets up, you have to look at that. One last point on that, and I'm not an expert on Iran. This was an audacious move by Israel to kill a Hamas leader who is in Tehran, attending the inauguration of the new Iranian president, staying in Iranian governmental guest house. Can you imagine?
Oh, boy.
Can you imagine how we would react if, let's say, some adversary took out somebody that's our friend in a guest house of our president as the president's being inaugurated? So what I'm saying is the Iranians are worked up. That was very audacious, and I would say, you know, much of the world was startled.
All right. Always a pleasure, Professor. Thank you very much.
Well, and we moved into various areas.
We did.
Thank you.
Professor Pat Willerton from the University of Arizona, where he'll be teaching in a couple of weeks Russian politics and Russian policy. Our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right by Copenhagen. They do a great job. Any of your framing needs, they will make sure it comes back. I know the work that over the years that I've had done with Mo and his family, the pieces come back ready. It's museum quality. Great job that they do there. Their website is moesgallery.com. We'll take a break right here. Then we're going to talk Mexican politics with our border reporter, Keith Rosenblum, with his monthly border report right after the break.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau, serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to Professor Pat Willerton. He is such a knowledgeable guy when it comes to Russian politics. Had a great half hour with him with our Monday one-on-one. In a moment, we'll be talking with Keith Rosenblum about Mexico. But first, I want to talk about Green Things. 3384 East River Road. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Their 13-acre site over there is also home to Zocalo Village, beautiful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and even Europe. Five shops there. They call it Zocalo Village, part of the Green Things complex. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com open daily in their 53rd year of business. When we do our telephone interviews, which we're going to do right now, the Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. At least once a month, we do our Mexico Border Report, hosted by longtime border observer Keith Rosenblum. Keith has an incredible resume, border reporting for both the Arizona Daily Star and the Arizona Republic, former congressional aide to the late U.S. Representative Jim Colby, who represented Southern Arizona for 22 years. Keith is a former fellow at the University of California, San Diego, Center for U.S.-Mexico Studies. Hey, Keith, how are you?
Hello, Bill. And we will divert people's appreciation for Russia or learning about it and rivet them to Mexico today.
Well, let me see if I can make a segue here. What has the Mexican relationship been with the Russians?
That's quite the segue. I have no idea. I have that's a question that catches Keith Rosenblum with all.
I thought I'd throw a dart against the wall.
I am all omniscient on Mexican topics, and yet this one may just paralyze me. Not really, because actually the relations between strongmen all over the world and President López Obrador are quite good. And so Mexico has actually been, we won't say in the, they haven't been in the Russian sphere, but they've been very much like the U.S. In other words, they've been approving of Ukraine, but López Obrador has been, as he was also with Nicolás Maduro in Venezuela, and as Mexico, he's been with Maduro, so has he been with other strongmen. There's a certain kind of loneliness at the top mentality of authoritarians, I guess, and they like to stick together. So,
I could ask you about Frida and Trotsky, but we don't want to go back that far.
I know that would really stump me. But in particular, the relations are actually, I mean, the Russian, this is one of the things I've come to learn in recent years, is just how Mexico in the 1960s and 70s really was a hive for Mexicans, for Russians, for East Germans, for a lot of the Soviet bloc countries, because Mexico was the back door to the U.S. And remember, it was only a fluke, really. It was never a done deal that Mexico was going to support the Allies in World War II.
Yeah.
There was a lot of influencing of Mexico to go to the Axis side. And so, the Mexicans have a foreign policy that is not does not march in lockstep with the United States by any means.
Mm-hmm. However, when there is an issue like on Wall Street, the peso is affected. And I see here that the peso has seen a sharp drop following what really started this landslide or huge downturn on Wall Street. So the peso has taken a hit.
The peso will be battered. The peso is going to be battered whether it was today anyway or it was going to be another 6 months or a year from now because their public expenditures are too high. And so it's inevitable that the peso decline. And it's not – to call it a decline might be a misnomer because it actually had ascended. It actually gone quite a bit up during the Lopez administration years when there were very little way of public debt that was taken on and very little spending. And so at that time, the peso has been at 20 before, at even 21. And with President Lopez Obrador, it climbed against the dollar to 15 and 15 and a half and 16. And so the acquisition power of Mexicans went up a huge amount. Imagine you were earning in pesos and all of a sudden things that you would buy when you came to Tucson were 30% cheaper because of the appreciation of your currency. So it is what this is happening right now is the peso is going back to near to where it was before President Lopez Obrador came in. But I wanted to say something also, a reference, because you brought up a good – it's funny how you allow a conversation to carom, to ricochet, it will actually bring you to cool topics.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I'm going to bring up is this, that actually difference between Mexico politically, thank you, and Mexico, the way the people speak, is a huge, in Spanish they call it a parte de agua, it's a huge gap. That is to say that no matter what Mexicans think about Russia at a governmental level, that is to say the president and the foreign relations and some of the other ministries, it really doesn't matter. It's funny because it really doesn't matter because Mexicans speak with their purchasing habits. And so whether even if the Mexican government were to ally itself tomorrow with Putin completely, mm-hmm. the rest of the country would pretty much just shrug because it doesn't make they, if you look at a aviation map, a travel map of how easy it is and how to do business and to travel to the U.S. where everybody's got a relative, everybody,
mm-hmm.
125 million Mexicans today, every single person has a sibling, a parent, an offspring,
mm-hmm.
and they or a cousin or a nephew. Everybody has one, and their references and they their national sport is baseball. Soccer is kind of parallel with it sometimes, but baseball, to my way of thinking, at least for northern Mexico, really enjoys the greatest fervor. Anyone that's doing business, no one's doing business in Eastern Europe. They are with China.
No.
But anyway, the point is that the people long ago, the Mexicans have spoken, you cannot find, I would have to search to find a Mexican who's got any of those familial relationships, either in Leningrad or in Shanghai.
And the Mexicans continue to spend and send a ton of money back to all those relatives. In fact, it looks like the first 6 months of the year have been record-setting. $6.2 billion flowing from Mexico into to relatives.
When you and I are discussing the great borscht that they have at a new restaurant in downtown Tucson, that will be something we need to be concerned with. But I don't foresee that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, and I think I may have gotten that wrong. It's remittances. They're flowing into Mexico, right? These are Mexicans who are working in the United States sending money home, and it's
That's the figure in the $60 billion plus. Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, that is that. I'm trying to remember whether that's where that stands, because whenever you're looking at the Mexican economics, you're looking at oil. I mean, the big ticket items. You're looking at tourism, oil, assembly plants, like, you know, maquiladoras, and then the remittances. And the remittances are a huge deal because they, and by the way, this is actually one of the things I'm glad you brought up because, you know, you can't, if you're in other states besides Arizona, you can send a lot of money to someone in Mexico without worrying. But, you know, that Arizona many years ago, I want to say maybe when Goddard was our attorney general, it goes way back.
Mm.
But we actually capped the amount you can send to Mexico to by Western Union or by MoneyGram to $500.
Really?
Which is absurd. I said that, yeah. I mean, I'm not a big finance guy, but the idea somehow and the cost of sending these amounts is huge. So anyway, back to the remittances. It's a huge amount of revenue for Mexico, and very difficult to send from the state of Arizona, not difficult to send from other places, but the states make the laws in terms of remittances. Now, that's different. That does not apply to somebody who has a Zelle account or you do a bank transfer to, but it does apply to Western Union and to MoneyGram and to the other money transfer entities.
Do you have any idea what percentage companies like Western Union would take off the top in a transaction?
Well, I'm glad you brought the topic up. It's really interesting. If you go to send someone some money by Dolex, you know, you've seen the exchange places around Tucson, it's Dolex.
Yeah.
If you go to Walmart or to another place to send money, you actually have two options. You can send money at a peso rate, a peso exchange rate that is artificially in favor of them, and pay a dollar.
Huh.
So what you're doing is they're making their money in the currency exchange.
Yes.
Or you can pay, I want to say it's $10, because I've done this many times. I have to make a quick, it turns you into a mathematician. I'm not, I failed out of third grade math, but I have been recovering ever since. And so you have to do a quick analysis right there in the store.
Mm-hmm.
So now, wait a minute. You're going to charge me $10 and you're going to give me a rate of 17.9 to the dollar. Or you're not going to charge me at anything at all, but you're going to give me a rate of 16.9 to the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you have to seriously figure out. And generally, what I've seen is if you're going to send more than $250 or $300, it makes sense to pay their $10 premium and get a better rate. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, I've always wondered about that
business. And when it says to people, don't worry, you know, free wire, we don't charge you anything at all to send money to Mexico. Yeah, that's true. But what you're sending and what your relatives are going to pick up in Mexico is actually a lot less in the end. So it's the equivalent of a bait and switch.
Yeah. All right. Interesting stuff. Got more interesting stuff for us with Keith after this. Take a break. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region.
averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat. And speaking of driving, it's only a 3-hour drive over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where you will have a very pleasant experience, especially doing a little hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, which is all greened up after a very healthy dose of the monsoon. So check it out. Nice drive. Not bad at all. Up to about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, Silver City and Grant County. Lots to do over there. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. We send a lot of our listeners over there. Everybody always has a great experience. We do our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Keith Rosenblum is with us for his monthly border report. And it's interesting, you won't hear this in the political ads, but July is on track to see the fifth consecutive monthly drop in migrant apprehensions along the U.S.-Mexico border, the lowest level in illegal immigration there since the fall of 2020 during the Trump administration. So there you are, Keith. You're not going to hear that certainly in any of the ads for President Trump.
I can't tell you how refreshing it will be not to hear that. These are all confluences of circumstances, and they're not things that happen from one day to the next, or a week or month to the next. They come from word getting out in Mexico and Central America as to what U.S. policies are. They come from the economies of these countries that, by and large, do well. Venezuela does not do well. That's why I come across lines in Nogales of Venezuelans, and I've actually made many Venezuelan friends, not intentionally. I mean, it's the equivalent. I don't need to have pen pals from Venezuela any longer because they've come to me.
Yeah,
but it is a place that you don't want to be. Although now, and I think this does have implications for our border policy and for the U.S., and that is what's going to happen now with Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, because he clearly lost his election. And yet he clearly runs the military. And people don't like to, people will not rebel. The history of mankind is that people who have guns tend to be the ones that issue orders. And it depends on what the thresholds are and what the equilibrium are. But Maduro lost. The U.S. government has recognized the opposition. So have in as many words, so have most in Latin America. And yet, Maduro is digging in deep, and it won't surprise anybody that we see lots of controversy and possibly lots of violence in months to come.
Can you imagine 1/4 of the people who live in that country have left that country? Millions of people.
No one would have thought that. We think about this. This is like one of those Trivial Pursuit questions. Which countries in the world have the greatest, numbers, the greatest number of people in the diaspora, and then which countries have the greatest percentage of their nationals living in the diaspora? Mm-hmm. And it was never Venezuela. It is now. Now it's that you're correct. Now it's 25% of the country that's gone and is elsewhere. It used to be in the U.S. We see it. We see it with the Italians and the Greeks and the, who else, a lot of Israelis. As a proportion, those populations have 10% or 15%, something like that, of their country living abroad. Venezuela was never that way until Hugo Chavez came in 1999. And now it's not just that. It'll be one of those comedy sketches soon where they have the last person turn off the lights.
Yeah. So are those people that show up at the border, our border, from Venezuela, are they given status because they're fleeing political refugees?
No, we did. We were doing it as economic or political refugees.
Yes.
Because economic, the whole world would be in the U.S. tomorrow.
Of course.
If economic refugees was the only metric. But I believe now that we've curtailed the economic part of it, I actually don't know. You kind of blindsided me with the question, which good reporters do. But I do believe that that if you're Venezuelan and you're a good baseball player or a good singer or a good programmer, the doors are open to you right away. They've always happened. But no, insofar as the just people who have gone through the Darien Pass to get. And by the way, Mexico also has been a big beneficiary, but Mexico needs to be paying. This is a topic that definitely does not come up in Mexico, and that is that the Mexican population is shrinking very fast. And but for the populations in the rural areas of Mexico, you would have exactly the same decline. We're 1.6. Fertility rate in the U.S., which means we're way below replacement. And so is Mexico. Mexico is just a little bit below zero right now. And if it weren't, again, if it weren't for the rural parts of Mexico, the city reproductive rates, metropolitan reproductive rates are parallel with ours. They are spot on with ours. So Mexico is a very quickly aging society. And as with South Korea in particular and Italy, there will be no Mexico. I don't know what the Rosenblums to follow me when on a Buckmaster show in 2200 will talk about, because there will be no Mexico. It'll just have to be the border report with Guatemala or whatever.
The world's largest oil supply, and I don't know if it's got to be one of the largest, Venezuela. And the sanctions, they can't sell their oil, I guess.
That's correct. We've crimped their economy, and we're going to have to do something. This is part of it's part of our kind of not holier than thou, but our piety when it comes to how to treat people like Nicolas Maduro, because he's a scoundrel, and what he's done is heinous. And he should be judged by his own people, and he should be in a prison somewhere in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. But more pragmatically, the guy still commands the armed forces. He still holds the keys to lots of money. We're going to have to figure out some kind of sweet exit strategy for him that involves immunity. And again, this is one of those things we face all the time in the U.S., with protective witnesses, with giving people immunity from prosecution, even though you know they are just as dirty as anybody else and should be jailed. But in particular, Venezuela is going to have this issue very soon as they figure out what to do with a guy who essentially has hijacked the country to his own, to his own likes, and he followed the cue of Hugo Chavez.
All right, Keith, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
It's mine. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much. Keith Rosenblum checks in with us once a month, learning about, well, we learned a little bit about Mexico today, and we learned a little bit about Russian politics. So very much an international flavor of the Buckmaster Show. All right. On behalf of John, engineering and producing the show, Bill, wishing everybody well. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.